This podcast contains explicit content and is not suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome back to Always the Last to Know. I'm Ash.
I'm Katie. I had a tickle in my throat.
Just a wee tickle. Are you okay? What's going on?
I'm just so busy.
How's your new job?
Had a great day. It's so good. I love decorating cakes. So much fun. Yeah, I
good. No complaints. That makes me so happy.
No complaints. It smells delicious. I just get to make cute, fun cakes all the time. I need to get more comfortable shoes. That's on me.
Some good insoles.
Yeah, what's going on, Ashley, is that we've started a book club, listeners. That's what's really going on here. We are reading The Unfortunate Side Effects of Heartbreak and Magic. I keep messing up that title.
I'm just going to say that you're right. I'm pretty sure that's what it is, though.
Okay.
It's fantastic.
We are kind of like all in the beginning. The first is like read chapters 1-5. Most people are just now getting this book and cracking into it. So if you are interested in joining, we will include a link, I guess, in the show notes. Fun little app to where this is all going on.
I can also put a link into the link tree.
Oh, yes. That's a thing. That is a thing that we'll do. Feel free to join. I would join sooner rather than later because Ashley and I are probably going to get moving soon on like moving forward within both the book and just kind of getting the book club itself going. So please join us, even if you've already read the book.
We'd love some insight. We'd love your thoughts.
Come chat with us. That's what's going on for me.
Before we move on from the book thing, I do want to say shout out to our friend Sarah, because she is the one who sent them to us for Christmas. Sarah has also, friend of the pod, has been on the pod before.
Yes. And she's in the book club.
Yay. We were like, we know that you read it already, but you can still join us anyway, because like you literally sent us the book.
Like, please do. And then we can keep, I intend to keep this going. I read a lot of books and listen to a lot of audiobooks. I've gotten very competitive with our friend Andy on Goodreads, who she's kicking my butt right now. She's read like, I think like 4 more books than I have this year. But I'm going
to
catch
many
up.
Many more books than me already. But I'm happy because I want to read more books. I used to read so much when I was a kid, and then like I don't know what fucking happened. Life, adulthood. And there's a book that I have to finish that I started when I was flying home from Florida after Christmas. So I want to finish that. It's called Homicide and Hollow Hollow. It's like a comfy, cozy murder mystery series with a Filipino protagonist.
Love that.
Yeah, it's I really love it so much. So I want to finish that one, and then we have our book, and I just want to read more. So I'm like super excited about this book club to be a thing.
I am also making my way through the Will Trent books right now.
Do you watch the show?
I watched the first episode, and then I found out that they were based on books, and I said, oh, gonna do that first.
Okay, because the new season is coming out.
Yes, the new season. Actually, I believe it just started.
Oh.
I'm glad that I did that, because just what I saw in the first episode was already a mixture of the first 3 books.
Okay.
I was like, ooh, thank God. Which does make sense, because the first book is fucking dark.
Yeah. It's a really, really interesting mixture of vibes with this show.
The writer, Karen Slaughter, I'm on a whole thing where I'm only reading books written by women this year.
Nice.
I may sneak in one of my favorite books, Tom Robbins, but I already own that and I've already read it before. So like only buying new books written by women. Jitterbug Perfume, for anyone who's wondering. But I first read Pretty Girls, written by Karen Slaughter, who does the Will Trent books. So fucking dark. There were a few times where I had to like take my headphones off and I was like, holy shit. What the fuck?
What the fuck?
Yeah. But it was so good.
So join the book club. And what is going on with me? I feel like I've had a very exciting month last several weeks.
Yeah.
I went to my first lesbian bar.
Yes.
Yes, I did.
Yes, you did.
I went to Henrietta Hudson's in the city as kind of like a extension of birthday celebrations with my friend Tim and his friends Gabby and West. And it was so much fun. Although I do have to say that, you know, it was a Friday night and it was a big crowd and it was kind of overwhelming there. It was just a lot of people trying to get to the bathroom. It was like moving just through like a sea of bodies and nobody would like fucking move. So it was a little overwhelming, but I still had fun, you know? I still had a lot of fun. We also went to this club Hush. So that was really fun. We stayed out until like 4:30 in the morning. That is the latest I think I've ever stayed out in a long time. But I had a fantastic time and it was so much fun in the city. We got a Korean barbecue the next morning, which I desperately needed because I drank way too much. I drank way too much while we were out. But I had so much fun.
The photos looked immaculate.
There were so many photos in my camera roll that I don't remember taking and that I found the next day on the train ride home. And I was like, oh, I was unhinged. But you know what? It was great.
Good.
Oh my God. Oh, it was fun. It was fun. I'm going to a gala tomorrow. We're recording right now, March 1st. Happy mm-hmm. Women's History Month. I'm going mm-hmm. to a gala for like a work thing tomorrow. So that's exciting. I'm excited to like wear a fancy dress, get all dolled up. You know, I love to do that.
Of course.
And I'm going with Lauren and Helen, so it'll be fun. Oh, this is the thing that we made the Taylor Swift basket for.
The auction thing?
Yes, the auction thing. She was like, we need to put together two baskets. So we did one with like some signed golf stuff. And then the other one, she was like, we're going to make a Taylor Swift one because all these people that'll be here are like parents of like teenage girls. And I'm like, okay. So I took the popcorn bucket. I sacrificed my popcorn bucket and I put like everything in there. We also had like a blanket. There's like multiple bags, a shit ton of stickers, some jewelry, some friendship bracelets. It's all very cute. It's very Taylor Swift.
Perfect. That's yes. really brilliant on their
right?
part.
I think brilliant. It's going to be great. I really hope that it like racks up a lot of money for donations. I think it'll be a lot of fun tomorrow. I'm excited.
I remember when I was little and I thought that like galas were like so, so fancy that it intimidated me. And now as an adult, it's like fun fancy.
Yes, it's so much fun.
Like it used to seem like really overwhelming, but now that I'm like a grown up and I know what's going on, they're so fucking fun. I feel like even in my like early 20s, I like didn't appreciate a good gala, but I'm at a better point now. Galas yeah. and I are tight.
I'm a bit more sophisticated now.
Galas and I, we go way back.
In my old age of 33 years of life.
I'm a galas gal, so... We need to stop because I could keep going.
I know. You know what? That's kind of like all that I have for right now. So why don't we just get into the episode?
Perfect.
With the recent ruling in Alabama that is now affecting in vitro fertilization and being that it is now Women's History Month, I want to talk about IVF, what it is, and why it may be used. We're also going to cover what the Alabama ruling was and what its ramifications are and the legal implications it holds. And we'll also talk about some statistics surrounding IVF.
I'm super glad that you're doing this because I ran into a lot of IVF legal stuff when I was in my rabbit hole about clones. And there was like a lot of places that had like very specific language and stuff surrounding clones because of IVF. It was really interesting. And I don't really know a lot about it.
Neither did I. So I had a lot of fun learning about this process. So let's start with what IVF is and the process of it. IVF treatments are used to help navigate infertility issues that someone may have. The process is used to create embryos from eggs that are collected by doctors from a person's ovaries. Then, in a lab, the developing eggs are mixed together with sperm, better known as fertilization. The embryos begin to grow inside of a special incubator for 3 to 5 days, and then they are implanted back into the uterus, and within a few days, the embryo should attach itself to the uterine lining. 10 days later, you take a blood test to find out if you're pregnant. That's the basics of it, but I do want to describe the process a bit. I might have gathered this information.
In case you guys are curious, I'm forcing Ashley to not wear her glasses because I'm the one who wears glasses. We're at that point in our friendship.
And like, I just can't read right now. So let me start that again.
Yeah.
That's the basics of it. But I do want to describe the process of it. I have gathered this information from Yale Medicine and Planned Parenthood.
Mail Yedison, and it's still Planned Parenthood.
Oh, boy. Okay. The cycle of an IVF treatment contains 4 different phases. Those are ovulation stimulation, egg retrieval, insemination, and embryo implantation. The IVF treatment usually begins on the first day of the menstrual cycle, or as close to it as you can get. There are 3 different hormonal medications that need to be injected, and they each have a different function. Ovarian stimulation medications typically contain 2 common hormones found naturally in the body: follicle stimulating hormone, FSH, and luteinizing hormone, LH, which prompt the ovary follicles, fluid-filled sacs, each containing 1 egg, to mature, enabling ovulation. Another hormonal medicine prevents ovulation from occurring until several eggs have properly matured. The third, called the trigger, stimulates a timely release of the egg so that it can be collected and retrieved. So it's pretty much just controlling the steps of ovulation.
Absolutely. I hate the trigger. That
just
name.
The term. Yeah.
Someone get a PR team for that. Workshop that, because it's not good.
Fix
Come
it.
On. They're so smart that they like figured this process out, but they're so horrible at naming things.
The ovarian response to these medicines will be monitored by the doctors throughout the process, usually through vaginal ultrasounds and measuring blood levels of ovarian hormones. They're checking to see that your estrogen levels go up while keeping your progesterone levels low. This part of the process takes several months and is a way to help your body go through ovulation to produce mature eggs. Choosing when to retrieve the eggs is based on your blood hormone levels and the size and number of ovarian follicles that are visible on the ultrasound. Here's that word again. The trigger injectable medication is to be administered about 34 to 36 hours before the egg retrieval process begins. It's crucial to the process that this step is timed accurately.
Wow. Wow. I don't know much what that's complicated.
Yeah, it is. On the day of the egg retrieval, the person providing the sperm will attend the appointment as well to give their sample. Sample.
I'm so sorry. I'm such a child. I'm such a child. I just love that it's sample. Like
it's the implications of what sample means for me. A quote from Yale Medicine about the actual removal process. During egg retrieval, an ultrasound probe with an attached needle guide is placed into... Are you okay?
I was convinced that you said it wrong.
Oh, the male Yedison.
When you said Yale Medicine, I was like, wait, that's not a thing. As if I'm Yedison.
Yedison.
So I was just trying to quietly cough, laugh.
I was like, something is happening. There's a struggle occurring. And I feel bad that I can't check on you in person.
No, I'm fine. I just kept like getting caught up and like cracking up at the idea of me thinking like Yale is not a thing. I was like, that is no.
That's not what it's supposed to be said.
It's Mail Yedison. So fucking sure of it. As if I have ever in my life before today said the word Yedison. But you don't understand the conviction in which I was so sure.
Okay. Let's start this over. During egg retrieval, an ultrasound probe with an attached needle guide is placed into the vagina. IV sedatives and local anesthetics, I see the look on your face, are used during the procedure. Once follicles are identified, doctors will pass a thin needle along the ultrasound guide through the wall of the vagina into the ovary. Doctors will collect eggs from the visible follicles and prepare them for embryo transfer. End quote. Are you okay?
I'm sorry. What type of pain prevention is used, did you say?
IV sedatives and local anesthetics.
Not enough. I don't know. It was the thin needle between layers. Ooh. Nope. I don't want to say the visual that I have because it makes me physically so uncomfortable.
I literally watched your body like recoil multiple times. And I was like, yeah, I see it. I see it happening. I see the ick happening for you.
Yeah, you did watch me recoil. That this is like such a process. Okay. Wowza.
Once the eggs are collected, the in-lab insemination process begins. The egg and sperm are placed into a tube. And for any sperm that have lower motility, meaning they don't swim as well, they will be injected directly into the eggs to begin fertilization.
The fact that they can do that?
Why?
This is... Right? Medically fucking wild.
It's fascinating.
Yes. I need to stop thinking about it like the way that I was because medically, like, this is fascinating.
You're like, I can appreciate the fact that they can actually do these procedures.
Yes, absolutely.
Better way to look at it. After 3 to 5 days in the fertilization tube, the embryo transfer procedure happens. A doctor performs an abdominal ultrasound while a fertility specialist cleanses the cervix. The embryos are selected based on different factors, including your age, prior reproductive history and health profile, and the number and quality of the available embryos. The embryos will be loaded into a catheter. The embryos are deposited. I know, I see your face. The embryos are deposited into the uterus in a catheter that is inserted through the cervix. You have to stay in a reclined position for 15 minutes after the embryos are deposited, which, sounds like regular baby Megan.
For a second, I thought you were going to say, like, well, they did it. I don't know. And I was like, what the fuck? But no.
After.
Glad I waited.
There are daily shots of progesterone hormone that may be taken for the first 8 to 10 weeks after the embryo transfer. The hormone makes it easier for the embryo to survive in the uterus. Around 2 weeks later, there's a blood test that has to be done that measures the levels of the hormone human chorionic gonadotropin, HCG, are in your blood.
Hell yeah, dude.
Yep, I'm sure it's not quite right, but that's okay. Detection of HCG means that the implantation worked and the person is now pregnant.
Amazing.
What a process to go through. There are definitely some side effects of going through IVF treatments, so I'm just going to list them off. Bloating, cramping, breast tenderness, mood swings, headaches, bruising from the shots, allergic reaction to medicines, bleeding, and infection. And I'm like, besides the bruising from the shots, reactions to medicine, and infections, like, that all sounds like the period that I get every month. But I am sure that it's to a more intense level, you know?
After what you just described, absolutely.
And this isn't just a taxing process on the body. It's also a very emotional process. And not just because of the hormonal differences, but for partners who are struggling with fertility issues and are trying everything that they can to become parents, I am sure that this process is one that takes a lot of open communication and understanding of each other to really be able to handle taking this on.
Absolutely. This is not something that comes lightly. It's very expensive.
Very expensive, which we will get to.
This is a huge choice. I can't even imagine the emotional weight of that.
There's a lot of stress, anxiety, and depression that is prevalent during this process too. And you know what? That's with pregnancy in general. No matter how you get pregnant, that is something that a lot of pregnant people are affected by. It's a lot. Your body is going through so much. From the Center of Perinatal Excellence, quote, "The effects of infertility is a traumatic experience for many people. It can cause relationship and financial stress, social isolation, obsession, and self-criticism. Over time, this can become an ongoing process of coping with these intense emotions, which can impact your emotional and mental health," end quote. There was also a study done and published in the British Journal of Medical Psychology titled "The Psychological Well-being of Infertile Women After a Failed IVF Attempt: The Effects of Coping," that found quote, 100 infertile women and 73 female controls completed three measures of psychological well-being, depression, self-esteem, and self-confidence, on two occasions, times 1 and 2, coinciding with the beginning and end of a failed IVF attempt by the infertile women. At time 2, the IVF women were also asked to indicate whether they had used a number of different coping responses in relation to dealing with their failed IVF attempt. As predicted, IVF women were more depressed and had lower self-esteem than controls prior to the treatment cycle. And both before and after the treatment cycle, they were less self-confident. After the failed IVF procedure, IVF women were more depressed and had lower levels of self-esteem than they did prior to the treatment cycle. In terms of the effects of coping on the post-attempt well-being of the IVF women, the use of problem-focused coping was associated with high levels of well-being, while the use of avoidance coping and seeking social support was associated with low levels of well-being, end quote.
Interesting.
The Center of Perinatal Excellence, which I'm just going to refer to as COPE from now on, states that there is evidence that cognitive behavior therapy and support groups can not only improve the conditions during IVF treatments, but also improve the likelihood of becoming pregnant.
Fucking fascinating.
Right? Therapy is wonderful.
Therapy is so wonderful. CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, is really fascinating. Learning about how it affects like the physical brain is really, really interesting. It doesn't surprise me to hear that it has an impact on the pregnancy outcome, or that it can have an impact on that. It reminds me about how child cancer recovery rates are often higher simply because like the kids believe that they're gonna get better.
Yeah.
And it works. It's like, that's so cool. So interesting.
I find it fascinating. From the Society for Assisted Reproductive Technology, quote, the first treatment cycle has been found to be the most stressful for patients, with the possibility of high levels of confusion, bewilderment, and anxiety. This may be due in part to the fact that it is a new experience with an unfamiliar medical process, medications, and treatment protocols that can change during the cycle, and possibly working with a new team of healthcare professionals. Within a treatment cycle, patients view IVF as a series of stages which must be successfully completed before moving on to the next phase of treatment. Monitoring, retrieval, fertilization, embryo transfer, waiting period, and pregnancy test stages. The levels of stress, anxiety, and anticipation rise with each stage, peaking during the waiting period. Research has shown that in order to perceived stress for patients, waiting to hear the outcome of the embryo transfer is the most stressful, which I think makes complete sense. Followed by waiting to hear whether fertilization has occurred. Okay, again, I think that makes sense. And then the egg retrieval stage. That's a whole process. So, you know, that's a physical process happening. I'm not surprised at all that those are like the top three. Patients are aware of the importance of these key phases in the IVF process, and the uncertainty of the outcome is often highly distressing, end quote. Makes so much sense.
Yeah, I'm glad that they included it. I'm glad that you included all of that because it's so important to set the stipulations of what was going on, because I was not surprised to see that happening. I had something else to say and I forgot what it was, and I was trying to talk my way into remembering it, but I can't remember what it was.
I'm so sorry.
That's not your fault. I'm very high.
We also can't forget to mention the high monetary cost of IVF while we are discussing the stress factors during this process. According to an article from Forbes published in August of 2023, quote, a single IVF cycle can range from $15,000 to $30,000, depending on the center and the patient's individual medication needs. Medications can account for up to 35% of those charges, end quote. And I can only imagine how incredibly stressful it would be on a person to have to go through this process once, but if, like, forbid, the implantation process did not take and you had to start all over, that's another estimated 15 to 30K that has to be spent. And I don't know about y'all, but I certainly don't have that kind of money just like laying around. And I'm sure the average American does not just have that laying around. This takes a lot of dedication in a monetary, physical, and mental way throughout this entire process.
It hits every aspect of your life.
Now let's talk about the reasons why people would choose to use IVF to help with their fertility. People with blocked, damaged, or missing fallopian tubes and those who have severe sperm abnormalities are ideal candidates for IVF. It's an option for anyone who has experienced a long history of fertility issues or endometriosis. Egg freezing is effective at assisting people with cancer not losing the ability to have children when they have recovered, and younger people who may not currently want children but will in the future.
Yeah, it's so important for people to have options throughout their lives. Like, how many stories has it been of like family or career? Being able to provide people with options to have both is incredible, immaculate. Love it. It should be more accessible.
Absolutely. From Penn Medicine. Men Pedicine.
Pedicine.
I love that both of them became male.
Men.
Male. Men.
Yeah.
Male
what men. The fuck? Huh.
Are you frozen?
No, I'm just okay. Pensive.
Mensive.
Okay. Well, because then I started thinking about Princeton. Prince.
Okay, Katie.
Men are everywhere.
Men are everywhere. From Penn Medicine, quote, 1 million babies born in the United States between 1987 and 2015 through the use of IVF or other assisted reproductive technologies, according to a report released in 2017 by the U.S. Society of Assisted Reproductive Technology, SART. Assisted reproductive technologies include IVF or the use of an egg donor, sperm donor, or adopted embryo, end quote.
An adopted embryo. Oh. Okay, that's really cool.
The latest SART report shows that 61,740 babies were born in the U.S. as a result of IVF in 2012. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, reports about 4 million births per year in the U.S., meaning 1 to 2% of all U.S. births annually are via IVF.
How many births in general a year?
This was in 2014, but 4 million. It's a lot of babies in the U.S.
Did you know that there's only 1 million people in the state of Maine?
It's Maine four times.
In just babies.
Just babies.
Whoa. That's really freaking me out. That's a lot of babies a year. I really cannot handle knowing that number.
Babies are a lot, man. Babies are a lot. Data from the CDC states between 2017 and 2019, 10% of American women ages 15 to 44 said that they had received some form of fertility service. That share, which has remained relatively stable since the early 2000s, varies by age and educational attainment. Women ages 35 to 44 are more likely than those younger than 35 to say they've used these services, 18% versus 7%. In addition, women with a bachelor's degree or more education are more likely than women with less education to have used fertility services, 15% versus 9%. Bachelor's degree, they're trying to work. They're trying to build their life. They're trying to build their career, so they're waiting.
They tend to have higher paying job opportunities and, like, can afford it.
Yeah.
Which is bullshit, but, like...
It's the reality.
I hate that it's...
Among the 10% of women who have used any fertility service, the most commonly used type is fertility advice, with 78% saying they've received this. About 6 in 10, 61%, say they've received fertility testing for themselves or their partner, and 53% say they've used drugs to improve ovulation. More invasive procedures are used less often. Among those who have received any fertility service, 11% say they have had surgery or use drugs to resolve tube blockages, endometriosis, or fibroids. Some 14% have used artificial insemination, and 2% have used in vitro fertilization. Among all women ages 15 to 44, 1.1% have received artificial insemination or in vitro fertilization. So now that we've gone over what IVF is, the process of it, who can benefit from these treatments, the costs of it, let's talk about this recent Alabama ruling and what its impacts are.
Okay.
Last week, the Alabama Supreme Court ruled that frozen embryos can be considered children under state law. This ruling was decided during a pair of wrongful death lawsuits brought by three couples who had frozen embryos destroyed in an accident at a fertility clinic. The justices cited anti-abortion language in the Alabama Constitution and ruled that an 1872 law allowing parents to sue over the death of a minor child, quote, applies to all unborn children, regardless of their location, end quote. It's essentially stating that any unborn embryo, whether frozen or in the womb, is considered a full-fledged child and dependent.
Can they be claimed on taxes?
Bro, can I take out life insurance on the embryo? Because if we're gonna do it, let's do it all the way.
Let's fucking do it.
If you wanna be like that, be in it. Come on. For now, this doesn't seem to have criminal implications to it, but it certainly brings about the fear that lawsuits can be brought against IVF providers for any loss of embryos, including if one of the multiple that are deposited into the uterus doesn't attach to the uterine lining. This is a dangerous precedent to set in a process that can have less than predictable results. There are some Alabama IVF providers that have already begun to halt their services over these types of concerns.
If any listeners are a lawyer, can you write in about the way that, like, could a contract, a correctly worded contract, protect them from that? Like, do they need to, like, halt their services until they get a new thing for them to sign? Is that possible?
Yeah, that's very interesting. Oh, that's, I hope somebody writes in.
Please write in.
In an interview with NBC News, Dr. Mamie McLean, a reproductive endocrinologist at Alabama Fertility, said that she is concerned about the survival of IVF services in Alabama. Clinics may need to raise prices if they have trouble staffing providers or have to pay more for medical malpractice insurance. As a result, fewer people may be able to afford IVF and fewer insurers may be willing to cover the treatments, end quote.
Okay. There's all of that aspect.
Dr. Brett Davenport, a reproductive endocrinologist at Fertility Institute of North Alabama, also expressed his concerns to NBC News, stating, "The cost of insurance to defend against wrongful death lawsuits might actually prevent us from practicing. It would be so high," end quote.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. On Wednesday, February 20th, the University of Alabama, Birmingham announced its Division of Reproductive Endocrinology and Infertility has paused the treatments. Quote, as it evaluates the Alabama Supreme Court's decision that a cryopreserved embryo is a human being, end quote. So they're all kind of being like, hold up, pause. We need to, like, take a step back and, like, reevaluate this situation now because what the fuck does this mean?
Yeah.
I have more for their statement. We are saddened that this will impact our patients' attempt to have a baby through IVF, but we must evaluate the potential that our patients and our physicians could be prosecuted criminally or face punitive damages for following the standard of care for IVF treatments, a statement from their spokeswoman, Savannah Copland. There's also the real possibility that this ruling will be used to further the push that we've seen for reproductive rights, specifically abortions, to be taken away from us. Priscilla Smith, director of the Program for the Study of Reproductive Justice at Yale Law School, expressed her worries about how this will be construed. Quote, well, if an embryo is a person outside the uterus, clearly it's a person in utero. She's like saying that that's what the people will try to say. Yeah. I don't want to be dramatic and say it's totally Handmaid's Tale, but more and more, you're in the situation, rather where the state controls your behavior, end quote. There are currently 14 states that have introduced fetal personhood bills into their 2024 legislative sessions.
It's only the beginning of March. It's only the beginning of March and you're like reporting on it, mm-hmm. which means that this has been in the fucking works. They don't have to be alarmists and say it's Handmaiden's Tale, but the amount of control that they are exerting on people's bodies is fucking out of control and it has to stop.
Before Roe was struck down, there were several states with broad personhood bills and several attempting to do what we've seen in Alabama. But because of Roe, we were able to like legally hold off some of these types of bills being passed. Now we're seeing an uptick in fetal personhood bills, anti-abortion bills, and bills to criminally prosecute women for abortions and even miscarriages. Like, that's already happened. There are women in jail for that shit.
Yeah.
The culmination of all of these bills is terrifying for all women. Women, but more specifically for Black, Hispanic, and Indigenous women who are already placed at a disadvantage by the systems of this country when it comes to healthcare and the justice system. There are already states attempting to give women the death penalty for abortion, which is fucking mind-blowing. I have a quote here, and I can't remember where it's from. But anyway, it's somewhere in the many sources that will be listed. In the source notes. Quote, in January 2023, 24 Republican legislators in the U.S. state of South Carolina sponsored the South Carolina Equal Protection Act of 2023, a bill designed to extend constitutional rights to embryos and fetuses at all stages of development, granting them equality with women already born. The bill makes women and pregnant people who undergo abortion subject to the state's homicide laws and punishments, including the death penalty. It allows exceptions if they face, quote, imminent death or great bodily injury, end quote, as well as to save the life of the mother, but not for rape and not for incest, end quote. The way that these politicians are like so ready to just kill women. So ready to just kill women.
Oh yeah. What the fuck?
Currently, we are also seeing a proposal in Congress called the Life at Conception Act, which defines a human being to, quote, include each member of the species Homo sapiens at all stages of life, including the moment of fertilization or cloning, or other moment at which an individual member of the human species comes into being, end quote. It also provides protection under the 14th Amendment, quote, for the right to life of each born and pre-born human person, end quote. It also currently does not have any provisions for IVF, which endangers access to the treatments and procedures. I just need you all to know that Katie is like physically appalled by this right now.
I was having such a good day.
I ruined it. I didn't ruin it.
I like can't even think, like I don't, like I want to make a joke, but I can't because it's just, like, so fucking foul and disgusting. And it's also like so specifically targeted towards women. Like, where are the people going after dudes who jerk off into socks? Like, what about those babies?
What about those babies? What about that sperm? Was that not usable? Was that not a life? Like, if you're gonna do it, you gotta be all in, bitches.
It's just ours. It's just us.
Okay.
All they want to do is control women. Duh.
I told Katie at the beginning of this episode, before we started recording, that there's a section in my notes when I start my notes where I have questions that I want to answer and what order I want to answer them in. And that's how I do the flow of my notes. And the last question that I asked was like, why do Republicans want to do this? And then underneath, I went, to control women, duh!
It's like so fucking ridiculous.
The bill is sponsored by 125 Republicans, Imagine getting that many of them to, like, agree on something, including Speaker Mike Johnson. After the Alabama ruling, Mike said in a statement to the Washington Post that he, quote, supports efforts to allow IVF treatments because he believes the life of every single child has inestimable dignity and value, end quote. But he made no comments on his support of the Life at Conception Act or if he would support provisions to allow IVF federally. Senator Tammy Duckworth, a Democrat, said to the Washington Post that, quote, not a single Republican has spoken to her about a bill that she has introduced that would establish a federal right to access IVF and other assisted reproductive technologies services nationwide, end quote. Tammy has actually used IVF herself and has been very vocal in her support of reproductive rights. I have a quote from her here that says, it's been crickets since the Alabama ruling. Let's make it clear. Republicans will say whatever they need to say to try to cover themselves on this. She has challenged Republicans in Congress to pass a measure to protect IVF. Quote, let's see if they vote for it when we bring it to the floor, she said.
I love her.
I love that. That's the energy we need. And that is my episode on IVF.
Fucking wild.
Happy Women's History Month.
Happy Women's History Month.
Let's destroy the patriarchy.
Take it all down. Just
burn it to the ground.
I'm fine with just taking it all down. It's fine. Just destroy it.
Just destroy it.
Damn, Ashley. That was an incredible, infuriating, but incredible, incredibly researched, well written episode about a topic that made me so angry and at one point very physically uncomfortable.
Yes, I'm so very sorry for that.
It's okay. It's not your fault at all. It was an incredibly important lesson to learn. Maybe we'll also include in the source notes like some like mental health groups.
You actually just reminded me of that, so thank you for bringing that up. Something that I found while doing my notes that is a place where people can get emotional support and mental health help is the National Infertility Association at resolve.org. They have a lot of different ways that you can find support. They have links to find support groups. They have links to find a professional. There's a helpline. There's an online support community. And then they have different like resources and advice. So this is a really, really fantastic resource for people to use if they are struggling with the stresses of going through this process. They also do have information on here about ways to make sure that your insurance is covering these things and other ways to help get financial help for this process. Because if you do choose that you would like to have a child and you would like to build a family in that way, and you're struggling to be able to do that, you should be able to have the resources because the technology exists for this to happen. It should be accessible to everyone who wants to have a family.
Absolutely. Even those who can't have children and don't want children, like me, sup. Don't be like feeling down on yourselves. There are also support groups through those same channels for people who are just dealing with infertility in general and how, you know, what causes that and like the impacts of that and stuff. You are like not less of a person just because you can't have kids on your own.
So I will have some links for those resources too listed in the show notes. And I'm excited for the rest of Women's History Month. We will see you all next week. Bye.
Bye. For any photos related to today's episode, please go to our Instagram.
You can follow us on Instagram and TikTok at AL2KPodcast.
Like us on Facebook at Always the Last to Know Podcast.
If you have any questions, please email us at AL2KPodcast@gmail.com.
Please share, rate, and review us on your podcast listening app of choice.
Join our Patreon. You can find us at patreon.com/AL2KPodcast or click the link in our bio on social media.
Thanks for listening.